Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Class Action Fairness and Damages Limitations Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 7, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in the Standard Fire Insurance Company v. Knowles. The question in this case is whether a named plaintiff in a state action case can, before the class is certified, preclude the removal of the case to federal court by purporting to limit the damages sought for putative class members to less than $5 million. The threshold that triggers the right of removal under the Class Action Fairness Act of 2005. To discuss the case, we have Brian Fitzpatrick, who's a professor of law at Vanderbilt Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Fitzpatrick.
Today, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Standard Fire Insurance v. Knowles. This is the first time the court has considered a provision of the Class Action Fairness Act of 2005, better known by its acronym, CAFA. CAFA was a very important and very controversial piece of tort reform legislation that Congress enacted in order to make it easier for corporations to remove class action cases filed in state court to federal court. The business community wanted this freedom because it has long believed that certain state court jurisdictions are biased against corporations and that federal courts are more impartial. The question in this case is whether clever plaintiffs can evade the expanded federal court jurisdiction in CAFA and keep class action cases in state court by stipulating that they will not accept any recovery in excess of CAFA's $5 million jurisdictional threshold. In this case, Greg Knowles brought suit against Standard on behalf of a class of Arkansas residents, alleging that Standard routinely underpaid Arkansas residents on homeowners' insurance claims. Knowles' suit was based on Arkansas law, and he filed it in Arkansas State Court. Before CAFA was enacted, most federal courts believed they could hear a class action based on state law only if every member of the class had more than $75,000 at stake in the suit. CAFA changed that. Now federal courts can hear class actions no matter how little each class member has at stake, so long as the class as a whole has more than $5 million at stake. Standard attempted to remove Knowles' case to Arkansas federal court on the basis that the case was worth more than $5 million. But in order to defeat this maneuver, Knowles stipulated that the class would not accept any portion of recovery greater than $5 million. The federal court in Arkansas agreed that this stipulation deprives it of jurisdiction and sent the case back to state court. The Eighth Circuit affirmed, and the Supreme Court decided to take another look. I will be surprised if the Supreme Court permits plaintiffs to evade CAFA with a stipulation of the sort attempted here, but the oral argument made it clear that this is not an easy case for either side. Although it is common for plaintiffs to evade federal court jurisdiction in individual litigation by stipulating to damages under the $75,000 jurisdictional threshold still applicable in individual suits, it is not clear how such a stipulation can be binding in a class action suit. Jurisdictional stipulations are made at the very outset of a case, and at that time, neither the plaintiff who filed the case nor the attorney who represents him or her has the authority to speak for the rest of the class. That authority does not come until much later, when a court decides that the plaintiff and attorney are adequate representatives under a strict legal process known as class certification. As the Supreme Court made clear 2 years ago in Smith v. Bayer, before this point, nothing the plaintiff or the attorney does can be binding on the rest of the class. As Justice Ginsburg repeatedly noted at oral argument, this presumably includes a promise to accept reduced damages in exchange for avoiding federal jurisdiction. To his credit, Knowles realized as much and argued that it is not a problem if the stipulation is not binding on the rest of the class at the outset of the case. There is time enough to worry about that, he says, at class certification. In his view, the state court will have to consider whether the stipulation is fair to the class at that time. If the stipulation is found to be fair, the class will be certified and stay in state court subject to the $5 million stipulation. If it is found unfair, the class will not be certified and the case will go away until, presumably, it is refiled by another class member. If the action is refiled, it will presumably no longer be accompanied by the offending stipulation, and the defendant will then be able to remove it at that time to federal court. At oral argument, Justice Kagan signaled that she thought corporate defendants had little to fear from this arrangement. But I'm not sure things are quite so simple. Could not a state judge decide that the stipulation is unfair, yet certify the class not subject to the stipulation? Although the corporation could remove the case at that time, the certification decision will have already been made by the state court, and I'm not sure whether a federal court could reexamine it. To allow plaintiffs to evade federal jurisdiction just long enough for state courts to rule on certification would undermine the very purpose of CAFA, which Justice Ginsburg also pointed out at argument. In addition, why would the refiled class action necessarily be unaccompanied by a similar stipulation? The holding of Smith v. Bayer was that a decision not to certify a class is not binding on absent class members. Thus, there is nothing to prevent a different class member from trying to get a different state court judge to certify the case despite the same stipulation. And this process could go on and on. All of this maneuvering would waste a lot of time and resources, not only of the courts, but of corporate defendants. Finally, if plaintiffs are allowed to avoid federal jurisdiction via stipulation, what is to prevent them from carving one class action case worth more than $5 million into smaller cases, each worth less than $5 million? If they did this, they would be able to keep all of the cases in state court. Several of the justices expressed concern that to accept Knowles' position here would create a giant loophole in CAFA. It is hard to see why the court would want to go down that path, but there are countervailing considerations. One consideration is the text of CAFA, which is worded identically to the individual suit diversity statute, and the individual suit statute has always been interpreted to permit stipulations to defeat jurisdiction. Should not the same words mean the same thing? Another consideration is whether there is a logical stopping point to Standard's position. Class plaintiffs make any number of decisions as to how to pursue the case that could affect the class's recovery. To sue for all possible causes of action, for example, or just some. To pursue injunctive relief or just damages. Can each of these decisions be reexamined at the removal stage to make sure class counsel is not trying to evade federal jurisdiction? The answers to these questions are not easy, and for this reason the case is not as easy as it might seem. Nonetheless, in light of the regard that the liberal justices express for Standard, I suspect the court will reverse and hold either that no stipulations can be used to defeat jurisdiction in class action cases, or at least not those stipulations with some sort of anti-federal jurisdiction motive. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.